You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about David Cronenberg's Eastern Promises.
Wait, he promised things for Easter? I'm confused.
I don't know. Easter Promises. It's like giant chocolate eggs.
You, no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a bear.
Sir, yes, sir! Yes! I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead
fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your host, I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Gallen.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. Jared, why are you just wearing a towel?
I got something to show you here in a minute. I'm going to do a backflip over here, and you'll enjoy it, I promise.
Oh, there goes the balls. And we also have with us, director of photography, Mike Riggs.
Oh, hello, it's getting steamy in here. Oh.
Not just our knives that are curved. Sorry.
Leans to the left.
I'm sorry. I am totally into tour. We also have with us costume designer, Kristen Jones.
Hello, hello.
And we're talking about David Cronenberg's Eastern Promises. And yes, there is a male buttocks, penis balls. Let's just go ahead and talk about it right now so we can just get it out of the way.
Best fight scene ever, question mark?
Best fight scene ever is Mission Impossible bathroom sequence with fucking...
Okay, fair. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Henry Cavill. This is a similar level of bathroom scene, but no one was naked in that one, so...
Yeah, you didn't get to see Cruise's sack, you know? If you got to see a sack, maybe better.
You know, and I like that they weren't like gratuitous with it. They were still trying to hide things like with like blocking, but there's just no way you can do a tuck and roll without seeing full fucking melons. You know, it's just not possible.
Yeah. There's no Austin Powersing in this. It's definitely just here we are. We're all going to do some stretches and some lunges.
My big question about all that is did he get his revenge back on that old man who fucking set him up in there? Did they kill him?
No.
Man, he deserves it.
He walks out of the bathhouse. That's the last you see him, right?
He's like,
yeah, technically the old man wasn't the one who specifically set him up. It was the father dude.
Yeah, but still, you know, he was the one that brought me in the room. We should have went and John Wick that guy before we went and did anything else.
But I think the whole point of the character is that he's a good guy, so he's not going to do that.
Yeah, but he still will kill if he has to, and I think we have to now.
I see that more as like once he gets into power, he'll deal with that next.
He'll make it happen. Yeah.
I like that the movie kind of leaves some loose ends like that. Like it doesn't need a bow on that. Because this is such
sequel.
I mean, maybe, but this was also kind of before like everything tried to have fucking IP added to it.
No, I think they were actually planning a sequel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They definitely were.
They were trying to do the next Taken series.
It was going to pick up with, you
old
know,
white dudes in there.
No, he's in power now, and he's running things with the sun and how that plays out.
I did think it was very ballsy of him to tell the son, hey, well we are played, going... Kristen. Thank you, thank you. I would have used it anyway, except now we're talking about balls, so like it's a weird thing. Yeah, no, I did think it, like, when he tells the son, he's like, hey, we're in charge now, we're gonna run this together. I was like, are you sure you're gonna say that? Like
no,
you don't have any
guy.
No, because if I were the son of a mafia or the daughter of a mafia organization and my driver comes to me and says, hey, we're going to run this together, I'd be like, whoa, like we are not running anything together. I'm the one in charge. I don't know. I wouldn't. Would you let your driver just automatically help you?
Well, he was promoted
run things?
Yeah, he was.
Is he promoted to what?
To the same level that the son was, like he got stars above his heart. That was the same thing.
I thought
that
was just like entry level. Like if you're
no,
in
that's
the...
like no. Cap. They called it a captain or something like that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. No, I don't know what the.
But all of that was
the
what's the hierarchy
is.
Here? Yeah, I need to know this. Okay.
Well, there was some mention of it with the Scotland Yard dude that was looking at the body that washed up on the river, and then also there was. Like Viggo Mortensen mentions it later when he's talking about like, no, the sun dude is my captain and I'm not going to go against him. And so there's a level of like loyalty things that are already established throughout the thing.
I feel like loyalty went out the window for me, at least when I heard him talking to the Scotland Yard guy. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to run this. I'm going to be in charge. And so I guess when he says in the next scene, like, hey, we're going to run this together. Like I just, feel like he shouldn't be trusted.
No, he doesn't need to be trusted. He is taking he's taken over from within.
Yeah, I think that also speaks to the relationship that the two characters have. I mean, the son is such a fuck up the whole time, and he's always trying to do things, but he's trying to do things the wrong way, and he's trying to do it behind his dad's back, and like, so he obviously wants power of his own in a way, and doesn't feel like he's capable of achieving it on his own. That's one of the reasons why he relies on Viggo's character so much. Like when they walk into that place and he's like, you think I'm going to fucking deal with this? No, that's why you're here to, you know, deal with the dead body or whatever that was in the freezer.
That's fair.
And he can go off and, you know, have a love nest with Viggo as well.
Yeah, dude is super horny for Viggo.
Yeah. And the dad is like, he is very, he's homophobic out the ass. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So actually the whole thing where he's talking to Viggo and he's like, I need to make sure you're not queer. I was like, I feel like you're the one who's.
Oh, yeah.
<who's> queer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Viggo uses that against him to the father. He's like, look, mm-hmm. you know, people think that he's gay. You know, so that now he becomes the surrogate son in that situation. But he was just setting him up to, you know, you could be my son so people could think that you are my son so you could be killed. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The old man deserved it. Whatever he gets.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody but Naomi Watts and her family.
Yeah, but you don't really get too much of her, like where she comes from before that. I don't know. They don't really build her out too much. It's just that she's kind of fallen into this thing and she gets enveloped into this story and she has to save this kid somehow and find that. But that's all we really know about them.
Yeah. Well
they mentioned she had, was it an abusive relationship? She had a bad relationship with someone from a different ethnicity. And
well, yeah,
that's why she had moved in with them.
She had a miscarriage or something.
She had a miscarriage. And,
oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, mm-hmm. yeah mm-hmm. The dad said that's because of mixed race. You know, yeah. they never take.
He was an uncle, but yes.
Yeah, oh, was uncle? That was uncle?
Yeah. Yeah,
it
was uncle.
I thought it was interesting to kind of establish early on that like both sides of this has these levels of bigotry that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like no one's good in the grand scheme of those things, but it is still a contrast between this relatively normal people and the mafia.
Well, but to be fair, I feel like it was also like the Russians were very racist, whereas the Brits were like good-hearted people who just wanted to save little babies.
Well, I guess she's still technically Russian. She's just been naturalized and anglicized or whatever. Like she's second generation or first generation, however that works, if she was born there. Because she still speaks a little bit, too.
Are you talking about Naomi Watts' character or Ukrainian 14-year-old?
Naomi Watts' character. Oh,
she's half Russian.
Oh, okay, so like her mom would have married a British guy.
Yeah, I think she was born in the UK. Yeah.
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 Man, that uncle. The dude's a dick, but that actor is fucking... He is great.
He is really good.
he's got these little micro moments that I was just constantly laughing at. Like right after right after he says that really racist shit, was like, oh, that's why your baby died. And they're like, oh, and the mom comes over and takes his fucking little vodka bottle and his glass that he was drinking out of.
She's like, you fucking Russians.
And then he picks up this thing of wine and he's just, and he's his like, disdain
fine,
for it.
Drink this
instead. Yeah, he's like, nah, I guess I'll have to drink this then.
But he
yeah.
still drinks it, yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That is such a good moment.
I love the reveal of him at the end. Where he, you know, it's the first time we've seen him. He's still alive. You know, they pan up on him and they're cutting the ham up. You know, I like that. It's a nice build. This movie feels huge. There's like so much going on. You know, but they also give you so much time with these characters that. But by the time that scene comes around, I was like, yeah, that's cool. I like that. That was good.
Yeah, this one's almost shockingly normal.
Yeah.
For a Cronenberg
flick. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, this was my second Cronenberg experience after what we talked about last week. So my understanding of Cronenberg was like, got lots of tone, got lots of interesting like characters and creepy vibes and stuff. But the level of body horror that the dude was into was shocking to me when I moved on from these two.
I do like how the body horror shows up in this, in his so-called normal movies, because I, as someone who, like, you know, like, as you just watch, like, normal action films, yeah, they can be gory, but the way he does it, I feel like he takes it to a whole new level. Usually people just like to, you know, squirt blood or show, you know, something popping out, but, like, with the neck slitting scene, you know, he shows you, like, sawing into the skin.
Yeah.
It's very visual. And it's kind of disgusting, but he does it in a way that it's interesting to, it's disgusting, but also interesting to look at.
Man, that has a whole nother layer is then the next time we see that kid, he's excited because he got tickets to the Chelsea game. And you're like, oh, he's got something off about him, you know, and it puts that first scene into perspective more. Which makes it even more fucked up.
When they fucking kill him at that? Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm talking about like
the barber dad. You just thought he was mistreating his son? Like,
Yeah.
Oh, no, I took that guy like straight up at his value. Like, this motherfucker's an idiot. I can't get him to do anything.
Oh, really? You instantly knew that? I thought he was just worried because he was having to do this. It was like his first kill or something, like this was an initiation or something. That's what I was vibing.
But I did not read it that way. Okay. No, I see how you could, though. Yeah.
Yeah, but then later, when you see that he's a little slow, he's a little off, he's touched by the angels or whatever, you're like, oh, holy shit, he's manipulating this dude because of his handicap. He can make him do these things.
Yeah, I read it the same way, Jared. Like, why is he freaking out to, like, try and... Is he trying to get his father's approval? Is he trying to get into this thing? It seemed like an initiation kind of deal. But then, yeah, they had a conversation about it after that, and he's talking about how he's touched, and it's like, oh, no, yeah. So it feels almost empathetically sad when they walk by and kill him.
That was hardcore. When he goes to the Chelsea game and they come up and, you know, slice his throat. That was very well done.
it's the brutality of it where the Cronenbergian bits come out.
Let's hold on it just a little bit longer.
No, yeah. Oh, and he like leans back and he like opens it up. He's like, oh.
Yeah. My wound needs some air.
Oh yeah, let me open that up a little bit. I think you're supposed to close down. I don't know about like trying to like open it more. Yeah.
I did think his gurgling sound effect was pretty funny.
Gross.
It is gross, but I don't know. You laugh or you cry, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and the other time, since we're talking about this, is like when he cuts off that dude's finger with that like clipper.
That's pretty
wild.
That's a great sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, the body washing up on the shore too. Like, it's pretty gruesome. When he's like going through and showing all the different pieces and here's it's professionally processed or whatever and he picks up all the fingers gone.
I was surprised at how still intact it was. I don't know what I was expecting. I guess for them to cut it up into little pieces, but when the body washed up, I was like, what was even the... I mean, I know the point was to get rid of identifying features, but I was like, you could have done more, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier. Like, identifying features, this motherfucker's covered in tattoos, and they're all Russian prison tattoos that mean shit. So, like, that's like saying... I'm not going to tell you my address, but here's 7 pictures of my house, some of them from the satellite and some of them from the street. And here, you can just figure it out. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I wonder if like Viggo was supposed to take those tattoos off and he didn't.
Oh, is that his calling card that he left the police?
Well, is that what the dude later said? I got your
no. He slips a note.
Progress they, report. Oh, okay. No, that was an actual note that he. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, the note. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A dead body with a progress report. Well, but was that the body though?
Yeah, that was
same body.
That was the same. Body.
We know that he does things kind of like he was leaving trails along the way, like that prostitute that he had to bang in front of Creel. To prove he's not gay.
Oh yeah.
You know, he dropped to the police that, you know, she needs help or whatever. And then so, because he comes back later and he's like, hey, she got randomly picked up by the cops, man. That was fucking wild.
Oh, wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Oh, I have no idea why that would happen. So yeah, I'm sure he was leaving trails along the way, you know, covering up as much as he could.
First time I saw the movie, I kind of disliked that he was an undercover agent. I just kind of took away, it took away. It was like, I kind of like him being like the hitman cleanup guy with a little kind of heart of gold, but if you fuck with him, he'll murder you. I don't know. I was kind of digging that. And then at the end of the movie, when it's like, thank you for being undercover for Scotland Yard. It takes away a little bit from his character.
He still is that hitman. He still will kill you. He still does have a heart of gold. I mean, all of those things are true.
I know, but he's kind of, I don't know. It's like he's pretending he's not really that guy, like in the movie. Yeah. I know he's doing that in real life, but now it's like a meta, I don't know, you know?
He's pretending then in the movie he's pretending.
Yeah. The people in the movie are saying it. I'm like, I don't know if I like that.
How would you have it different then?
He just not do that.
Yeah, you just take all the cop stuff out of it, and he's just doing his thing.
Yeah, so if it doesn't end that way,
he would become king.
He'd go back to like Vincent Cassell and be like, "Look, dude, your dad set me up." And he's like, "I know. I had an argument with him. I told this little kid about it. Even I told this little kid about it." And then they would get together and they would go, whack dad, and then end a movie.
Yeah, and they would raise that little girl together.
It's a happy little family.
While we're filling balloons with a fucking machine.
Yeah, yeah. Is that his kid or is that somebody else's, kid?
I assumed it was his sister. Or
really? I didn't know if that was his daughter.
One of his nieces.
Or something.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was also confused on that. There was enough familiarity that it seemed like it might have been trying to imply that she was related. His kid or whatever.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah.
Oh, no, it couldn't have been his sister because that old man says his wife died a long time ago and you never see him with anybody else. So, yeah, I guess it would have to be that'd be that old man's granddaughter then, right?
Was that the same girl that was playing the violin at the beginning?
Yes.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so, all right.
Or it was one of those girls.
It's a multi-generational restaurant,
It's a family business.
Yeah, this one really leans into the fucking Godfather tropes this time.
Yeah.
I think that's just how the mafia works, man. When you're here, you're family.
Thanks, Olive Garden.
What's the Russian equivalent of that? Hey, comrade.
Potato Garden. We'll be met the vodka.
The UK scenery is nice.
What was your favorite scenery?
Well, it's nice seeing the cobblestone and, especially in that whatever, that alleyway that led to the river inlet.
I was surprised to see, London, shots of London. So is this one of his first movies where he actually got out of Canada?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. He's like, he's all like, movie. I don't know what the fuck to do. Oh, God. What is that street?
Do you know why he left to shoot in Canada for this? I mean, to shoot in the UK for this? Left Canada?
Well, this project was originally funded by the BBC.
Hmm. So they made him.
I'm sure it was some kind of contract. Well, I mean, the story took place in the UK. You'd have to spend a lot of money to fake that. And you're going to have to send at least Naomi Watts out there to ride around on the bicycle just to get some landmarks. So if you're going to do all that, why not shoot it there?
How, speaking of that, how does she drive with a baby? at the end. Like, you know,
I wondered the same thing. I was like, that motherfucker didn't even leave that bag. But, he brought the baby with.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking the same shit. I was like, how is she going to get on this motorcycle and go back with this baby? I needed the scene of her, like, trying to figure that out. Like, fuck. Like, yeah. What do I do?
Vincent Cassell's character leaves the bag he fucking smuggles the baby out of the fucking hospital with. He leaves it in the back seat of the fucking car.
Yeah.
That's why she just stands there at the end holding the baby. She's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? I don't know how to get home now.
She's a grown-ass woman and can call a taxi, maybe? I don't know.
Her father's motorcycle's there. Come on, man.
She's left it once before.
Yeah, she left it earlier when Viggo's character sabotaged it.
Well, it wasn't working, you know, so.
Do you think it wasn't actually working, or do you think he, like, actually made it so it wouldn't work?
You just
work?
Broke my brain for a second thinking, did he sabotage it?
He did it. Yeah, I assumed he sabotaged it.
Well, because later when he fixes it, they show this one insert close-up where he, like, plugs a cable thing
You're
back
right!
in. And so I rewound it and tried to see if there was anything, if you could see if that cable wasn't plugged in or not
Bro.
In the earlier bit, and you couldn't really.
You're but, right. Like, he pulled the fuel line.
I just assumed that he couldn't do that. He sabotaged her because they were trying to figure out where she lived, and she kept saying, "No, thank you, I don't need a ride." And they were like, "Well, we'll make it so you need a ride." I just assumed that that's
you're
what happened.
Exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Or if he wasn't directed to do that, then he did it on his own to make sure that he could like keep tabs on her or something.
That's
so
good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Which is maybe also why he decided to fix it while wearing a full fucking suit with just his little towel thing on the ground to put his knee on there. He's just like, this will take like 3 seconds. Bloop, bloop, bloop.
It's the same thing. I had the same feeling. Have you ever seen My Cousin Vinny? Where they're like, you got mud in your tires. He's like, you have water in your engine.
He's a joke. Yeah, I do like how Viggo looks so fucking good in this. Like, he's always dressed to the nines. He's always got his hair, like, up and stuff. And
yeah, dude.
Yeah. I like how he likes to take care of himself. He's got some little details, like that the little thing he was kneeling on. Yeah. The handkerchief. That's the word I'm looking for.
Sometimes that his hairdo looks a little goofy when they...
It's a little poofed.
Yeah, when they're shooting up at him, kind of, like, off to the side, it looks... It starts looking like Bram Stoker's Dracula a little bit.
Oh, yeah, he's got the butt cheeks.
Yeah.
He's got the
butt
cheeks here.
It's almost like awkward Wolverine crossed with Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Hey, man, when you start getting these widow peaks in there and you start, like, you know, pulling your hair back, it just doesn't really, sometimes it doesn't really do what it's supposed to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But every now and then, like, his hair falls and then it's like, oh, there he is. It looks good. Okay.
Yeah, it really is the angle that they're shooting that hair at.
Yeah, but every time he watches, he's like, fuck.
They told me they fixed it.
I'm Wolverine with too much volume. Ridiculous. But also true. I do like the tattoos as well.
Yeah, like his like swearing in ceremony where where everybody in the room gets to talk shit to you, you know? They used to say fucked up shit about your family.
Your mother was a prostitute, not a very good one.
You had to stand there and be like, that's right. You can ridicule me and my family all you want, and I'm a man and I can handle it. You know, and then you can read my body tattoos and like read my whole story like I'm a comic book, you know.
I feel like that scene is what they built the whole movie around. Like, I feel like someone watched a documentary on Russian tattoos and was like, aha.
You know what? We can make a movie out of this.
That was
definitely
like the trailer scene for sure.
That was that. Cronenberg said that was just like a literal like line, a paragraph in the script, and Viggo and him got like so obsessed with it that when they went and did rewrites with the writer, they were like, "Please, more with the tattoos, more."
Hell yeah.
My issue with the tattoos is that I feel like they're not curated well. Like, I understand that there's like a map of your body, but like if I were designing it, I would design it more aesthetically pleasing. And I feel like the Russian mobsters did not think of this.
They're prison tattoos.
And it bothers me. Yeah, I know. That's exactly it.
With as good as they look, it's pretty impressive that they're doing that in prison, because that fucking back tattoo is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Do they use that same fucking needle? Is that like tattoo needle that they bust out of the suitcase?
I love that thing.
Is that like hundreds of years old? Is that been like used on every guy?
It had a
rubber
band on it, you know.
Looks so
I
gross.
I did enjoy how he's just like reclining with his little
he's fucking doing shots like fucking hell.
It's like, all right. Yeah, I'm gonna be here for a while. I'm comfortable.
That's right, do my knees.
Also, were they? I don't know how. I don't have tattoos. I feel like getting a tattoo on your knee is painful. Isn't that?
Fuck yeah.
Right? Like, that's. As just watching him do it, I was like, I feel like that's the worst place to get a tattoo.
And up on these, like, collarbones, like, right there. Like, holy shit.
Right, because they do it on the bones, right? Really, it's not, like, where you're, like, soft.
Put these where it really hurts. Yeah, okay.
No, fuck that. Nope, nope. I'm too much of a pussy. Can't do it. Sorry.
Hey,
sorry.
Man, you don't kneel for no one.
Oh.
Oh, wait. You kneel for no one. Isn't that his line to fucking Frodo?
You kneel to no one.
Yeah, and now he kneels for no one because he's got stars on his knees.
It's all connected. Holy shit.
Bro, holy shit.
Did you just Cronenberg the Lord of the Rings?
Is this what Strider did in retirement?
He went and fucking joined the...
That's why he's been... He's so
old. Fucking mob.
He's like, no, I'm so bored. Let me do something else, please.
Same composer for this one?
Howard Shore, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, okay. I didn't hear any Lord of the Rings in this one, so I think he'd...
No, he definitely went with the... The Russian-sounded music.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I mean, all of it fit really well. I do think I'm a little disappointed with how, like, I don't know. I am a little disappointed with how pedestrian this feels.
Pedestrian in one sense.
It's just a normal movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't have fucking...
Exactly.
Some kind of demon or crazy shit going on.
Yeah.
You're disappointed in this one, but not the last week's movie?
No, I think there's, like, there's so much there, you know, thematically to chew on.
I really enjoy A History of Violence, and I like how, like, it. That's a very contained film. This film's very big. You know, there's a lot more. The world's larger. There's a lot more shit going on. Like, the last one had to deal with, like, mobsters and shit, but it still felt like small potatoes. You know, this one feels like we're in some shit. You know, where these mobsters. This goes on forever. You know, this family's big in the whole fucking city, and everybody knows who these people are. You know, I don't know. Yeah, it feels like a larger scale.
I feel like the movie tries to give that sense of scale, and for most of it, it does achieve that. Honestly, for me, until the bathhouse scene, the fight scene in the bathhouse is three dudes and two knives. Like, when you kind of zoom out and think about it, like, it's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? Like, this movie doesn't have a big body count. It's not like, it's not fucking John Wick going around and murdering motherfuckers.
No guns.
No guns. Yeah. Nobody gets shot.
So most of the sense of dread is achieved from just tone and, you know, a few grotesque moments of brutality. So the fact that this movie feels as big as it is, when it's really, there's like eight characters in this, like total, like it's not a big movie, but he makes it feel bigger than it is, which I feel like is an accomplishment.
Yeah. You know what? Let's watch a trailer. Let's take a break. Watch David Cronenberg's trailer for Eastern Promises. We'll be right back.
We think he might be Russian mafia.
And he was a member of Vorev Sokolnia.
In Russian prisons, your life story is written on your body. In tattoos.
If you don't have tattoos, you don't exist.
I'm afraid we've lost the mother.
Unidentified woman died December the 20th, 2313. Baby girl born 20th of December... 2314.
Anya, where did you get this?
I found it in the handbag of a girl who died in my ward.
She'll bury her secrets with her body.
I'm a midwife. I was hoping to speak to the manager.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry if she had worked here. I would remember it is said.
It's all right. I'll probably find out more once I get her diary translated.
A diary?
You want to go for a drink?
It's Christmas. Everything's closed.
Sometimes, if things are closed, you just open them up.
This girl ended up in the hands of the Voriva Sokolnia. Do you know what that means?
How did you get in here?
They are always open doors.
He wants the diary.
My son Kirill's mentioned many a times.
I think he was threatening to harm the baby.
If the diary should find its way to the police.
Okay, boss, you don't have to worry. Police won't find anything.
She was 14, just a child.
Forget any of this ever happened. Stay away from people like me.
Have you read the diary? How can you keep doing what you're doing?
I decide what's right and what's wrong. You can't afford to be careless in any area.
I need to know who you are.
Show some respect.
This is respect.
the Vori were like a contagious disease. There's no cure once they've touched you.
And we're back. That was the trailer for David Cronenberg's Eastern Promises. Promises from the East.
I love the point to the fucking throat, like, you know, fuck yeah. You.
Not I'm watching that. You, but I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Well, like over in like the UK and stuff, instead of like the finger, it's not peace, peace is turned around with your fingers toward the person, but like back of the hand up like this is like fuck you. That's this, but yeah. So then this, I don't know, maybe to the throat, the V sign to the throat.
I'm going to fuck you up.
I'm going to fuck your throat. I don't know, but it's good. It feels very threatening. I like that.
He has a menacing nature in this that really, really works really well.
What do you think Eastern Promises means? Like, explain it to me, because I'm a little slow.
Well, the East would be Russian, right? So
okay. The
promise is that okay. We're gonna take you, little Ukrainian girl of the age of 13 or 14. She's 14 by the time she's in the UK, and we're gonna go give you a better life. And this man is gonna take care of you, and you're gonna live in the UK, and you're gonna have all this wealth and a job and food, and it's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be so good. And when they bring him over here under that promise, turns out, no, actually, we're sex trafficking. We're going to put you on heroin and we're going to rape you. And we're going to lock you in a fucking goddamn house where we're going to put curtains on the windows and lock them up. And now you're a slave.
And that's a promise.
Not great, Bob.
So okay, not really a good promise.
Get out of it. All right.
What did you get out of it?
I don't know. I was just wondering. I was wondering what are we being promised?
Well, I just assumed the promise was just like the East is obviously Russia, but the promise is that, you know, they'll be there always. No matter what, they're there.
I guess it could be like, yeah.
No, I enjoyed yours. I didn't think of it like that.
That's a great
perspective.
No, that was a really good summarization of several voiceover scenes worth of dialogue.
Yeah, well, there's a time where, because you were hearing the Ukrainian girl like read her diary passages, and I'm pretty sure there's a moment where she like straight up spells it out.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah, no, she did. Yeah,
she did. Yeah, I did. The only part that I really didn't like is that she gave her a little intro in the diary. Like, I don't know. I guess she's a child, but like, do people do intros in diaries?
They're like, hey, I'm so and so.
Yeah, this is my name, and here's my dad. I guess maybe she's a kid.
Yeah, you're right, because the way she's reading it, it's not like it's past tense. She's each entry is like, oh, today we did this, and it's not like she's writing it like she's already drugged up and she's trying to escape. It's not like a help note. It is like a diary. You're right.
Yeah, because the way, like, when they first started it, it sounds like something that you would write if you know you're about to die. Like, let me summarize my life real quick for you.
You're right. I don't know. The writing in this one is kind of a little sloppy. I didn't see any deleted scenes. There were none on the disc, on the Blu-ray or the 4K. But I don't know. It's just like, even the Scotland Yard guy, he shows up like three times in the movie.
Yeah. And I forget about him every time until he pops up like, oh, that's right. this guy's here.
I actually thought he was in the... You see him the first time at the river, right? When he's announcing this is the tattoo thing. When Viggo goes to get his tattoos, I thought he was one of those dudes walking in, and I was like, wait a second, is he also with them?
No, but he has a moment with the tattoos later when he shows them to him, and he's like, oh, fuck, man, you did that? And he's like, yeah, but this gives me power, bro. And he's like, all right.
What was the third time that he showed up?
When he gets the blood. From the
head of the family and do the blood sample.
He's like, oh, they probably infected me with the queer disease with their needles. God. And he's like, literally, like, what is he pouring? It's not vodka, but he's
pouring vodka.
No, he's pouring straight vodka on it.
He's pouring straight vodka on his wounds. Yeah. Yeah, it's good in the body and good on the skin.
It's high proof.
Yeah,
he's like, don't put your UK fucking needles in me. Only Russian needles. That's why they bring the fucking goddamn That's why the tattoo fucking gun and everything, or whatever that thing's called. That's why it's in the suitcase. They brought it from Russia, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I figured it was just because the dude needed to operate mobily. And so he's like, I got it with me. You don't have to come to Russia.
Yeah.
That's the less cool reason, Mike. Okay. I'm trying to give this movie as much as I can.
That's okay. The movie is trying to give itself as much as it can. But it, under a little bit of scrutiny, it's like, right, that's just like a dude who has this and walks around and does it for him. I think this is such an interesting exercise in the ways that, that tone can make things feel bigger than they actually are.
Mm. Yeah, the tone's the only thing that makes it feel... Well, I was going to say that's the only thing that makes it feel original. I guess sex trafficking, right? This is kind of a new plot. When did Taken come out?
Taken...
Because that's like the... That's,
7 or 8, I think, probably. It was around this time.
Because that's the...
2008, yeah. So yep. This was first.
That's the first movie I remember, I remember that being a plot point. And you do not see the Russian mob. Even today, I think the only thing I can really think of in a big Hollywood movie is John Wick.
With the Russian mob?
Yeah.
Instead of like the Italian or something like that?
Yeah. You don't see a lot of... At least in American cinema.
That's true.
So I guess it's got that going for it. All right, I'm being too harsh. I'm back down. Stand down. I'm standing down.
What do you feel like you're being harsh on? I'm confused. The fact that it's not an original idea, that we've seen other mob movies?
Yeah, it just feels like a bunch of other mob. You know what it is? It's because it's directed by David Cronenberg, right? It should be like something... I feel like it should be something more than this. I mean, it's a really good gangster movie, but I feel like I could get that from any fucking filmmaker, and... Really, it's the tone and the music's the only thing that make it feel Cronenberg-esque.
I think that this film and like A History of Violence, to me, it's Cronenberg showing that I don't have to do all the crazy shit that you think that I am. I can still try to tell a compelling story visually.
I disagree with that. I think it's actually the opposite. I think they are his attempts to be like, fine, I'll do a fucking normal movie and still get my shit in there some ways. Like, because he still has his body horror things in there. He still has his exploration of human nature. And this is...
And a transformation and all the things that he tries to do, but in everything. Yes.
But he's trying to do like the normal movie, the studio movie maybe, in his way. And I don't know, maybe he just got bored of it and he's like, here, I can do it, fuck off. And then he goes off to do the rest of his, you know, things after that. But I don't know, I can't speak to the breadth of his filmmaking repertoire. Ryan, how does that feel for you?
I don't know, this one feels like, this one feels so different from, I guess you're right, but it does feel so different from History of Violence to me. Like the sex scene in this with the prostitute is very... It is the most boring sex scene I've ever seen in a David Cronenberg movie, man.
You're being made to have sex with this person in front of this fucking psycho motherfucker.
Yeah. It's just so pedestrian, you know? I've seen this scene in a movie before.
Yeah.
And it I don't feel uncomfortable by it.
No, it seemed like it needed to maybe play up a little bit more of Vincent Cassel's character, like his interest in it or like something there. There was a little bit of sexual tension between him and Viggo, but not enough. I think they could have explored that a little bit more. Like, is there an implication that they maybe have a relationship or maybe not? You don't know. There's not really even an ambiguity there.
I mean, he's a dick. And then like also too, like when he breaks down and starts crying because he can't throw... I guess his half sister into the fucking water at the end. Like, I don't know, man. He just comes across as like a misunderstood, like fucking guy living a shadow life. And like, yeah, he just wants to go off in the ride off in the sunset and give Viggo Mortensen orders. I don't know. He's not that bad outside of murdering people, you know.
I think they try to show that about most of the characters. Is that you have a duality of everybody. You know, there's goods and bads with everybody.
Yeah, but
they do that with every character.
It doesn't make his, like, him watching the sex scene or the prostitution, the gay test or whatever the fuck he says. It doesn't make that, like, creepy or anything.
I think what's disturbing about the sex scene in this film isn't that it's creepy or that it's, you know, like compared to the stairs scene last week where it's... you know, pretty brutal. I think what makes this one so disturbing is that they don't see these young girls as humans, and they don't even see sex as something enjoyable. It's just a test to see if you're gay. That's what really, it's just like something you do. They might as well be jacking off into their hands.
But Kristen, there's like they deflate that scene. But they, I agree with you, but they deflate it right afterwards, because right after that sex scene, like Vigo's like, oh, what's your name? Oh, you know, just hang in there a little bit longer. Yeah. So it just evaporates anything. Like instantaneously, you know?
Well, I think they, so I think they added that, yeah, so that I do question why he made the last, like this movie and even the one last week, because it's like he was trying to do this for somebody, for the studios, for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like he had something to prove. And I think I think that scene immediately after where Vigo's like, oh yeah, what's your name? Here's some money. Take care of yourself. I think that was added there, not because Cronenberg wanted it, but because the previous scene, if you just are using these two young girls who are on drugs and like for nothing, you know, yeah, it is kind of disturbing. And I feel like that was added to soften it, and if that you're criticizing that, like I think that's a fair point, but I feel like, what is the point of this? Why did he even make these movies? There's just such a departure for him.
I think that scene is very important to his character, though. That's one of the first times we see him being soft in a situation.
Yeah,
outside of him, like trying to fuck Naomi Watts or whatever.
I'm not arguing that, Jared. I'm not arguing that.
I think that's still strong for his character, and I think that's a really good beat for him.
I totally agree with that. But what I'm saying is that is the same thing that you're going to see in any mob movie where the character is undercover. That's not David Cronenberg. Mm. What I'm saying is it's I've seen this before. It's not bad. This works. It works. That's why they're using it right now. And it's just kind of like, but you're David Cronenberg.
It's a trope and you expect more from him.
Yeah. Why are you giving me this? Damn, fucking
bro.
Bullshit.
He still nailed it though. Like,
I would actually add that.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, like, damn.
You can see his softness when before he fucks her, but when he's like, I don't. Like, what do we have to do this? What are we doing here? Like, come on. Like, that is to me setting up that he is different. That I don't think you need the scene at the end where he gives her money and asks her name and asks where she's from.
Yeah, but then you miss the whole thing about how he's like still he's playing both sides. I think that's a real big point later is when we catch that, you know, the cops had showed up to her and all that.
Yeah, but the cop thing,
the duality,
like,
of him,
the cops,
it makes
showing
it feel
up
like
later.
There's more later. Yeah, sorry.
If they skipped the scene where he's talking to her after, if he just left like a fuck ton of money or something, like if they just went straight to that, like he gets up later and he looks at her and he opens his wallet or whatever and he leaves. And then later we hear that she got taken by the cops. We could still connect that he was the one who gave it to him. We don't necessarily need that interaction between the two of them. I'm with you, Brian. That's the trope that we've seen this to, like, communicate. He's a good guy. No, we're picking up on that, and we're picking up on it on subtle ways. And so this is like the let's hit the audience over the head to make sure they know he's a good guy.
It feels like a studio note.
I hate to fight for the scene, but like I like that they make that person more of a person than just somebody he fucked.
She's not a person.
There's
she's
a moment there where you see her, she's like singing to herself, she's disassociating. Like, you know, they make her a fucking like a human being instead of just a fucking prostitute.
They could have just left that in with her there. Like
with her doing that, and then he throws money down and leaves, and then without all the dialogue, yeah, it works either way. But I'm saying, like that scene didn't bug me.
Well, yeah, to get back to the meta narrative part of this, for the sake of the conversation, though, like this isn't that much different than other movies that we've seen. So what is it about the normal Cronenbergian type of thing that this could have been, Brian? What do you feel like you're really missing out of this?
I wanted to see something weird. I'd like, you know, just, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm going to see when I go see a David Cronenberg movie. That's why I enjoy him so much. Like, you do not know the weird shit that's going to come out of this motherfucker's head. Like, you think you can, but no, there's just no way. It's always a good surprise. And it's always uncomfortable. And you're left with so many thoughts. And this is a fucking goddamn it's a mob movie, bro. I mean,
yeah, it's all it is. Yeah. But it's crafted really well, and it's enjoyable. And it I liked is. All the characters and all the things. Yeah, I think it's just him flexing. He's like, yeah, bitch, I'm a filmmaker.
Okay, the problem is like his flex is not like Scorsese's The Departed, you know, like, which is a flex, and it's like you could say it's a studio movie, and we're out here to
and
make money.
Remake.
But
it's a remake.
Yeah. But God. Yeah. Damn, fuck. That movie has more
really
surprising shit in it than this Cronenberg
film.
One.
But
no, dude, Jack Nicholson don't bust out a goddamn dildo. His character don't bust out a dildo in the middle of a fucking theater. No, that's
that
what I'm saying.
True.
There is there's surprise.
True.
There's no cocaine and there goes coke.
Don't
Do
come
it.
Up to you numb.
No,
yeah,
right?
I get it. Like,
no, I mean, there's these moments that are like surprising. This movie, like, it doesn't have it. I mean, I guess it's all built around the Russian culture, right? And the tattoos and showing us things we haven't seen before. But it just feels okay. Like, yeah, this is what you would do. This is the only way you're different. And it's just, that's not Cronenberg enough. I am super nitpicking. I know I'm being an asshole.
I swear.
Right now.
Yeah,
yeah,
holy
I am.
Shit.
I am aware.
Okay.
I just can't stop myself.
I don't think you're an asshole.
Well, if we're nitpicking, I feel the ending is what I didn't like. It was so cheesy. Like, let's save the little baby and raise her and be like a happy, loving family. And like I just, everyone got their happy ending and it was so cliche, all of it, that I mean,
you're right.
You know, I didn't enjoy any of that. From the moment that they find the little girl, the little baby girl, and the guy's like, oh, I can't do it. From that point on, everything, you could redo it and I'd be happy with it. You could just end it with like the flowers in the, like, the nursery crypt. Like, there's no sense of dread. This is just a happy ending, a happy mob movie. Like, and I don't think that there's a happy ending with the mob.
Yeah. I could have dealt with them like walking away at that alleyway, like Vigo and Vincent Cassell. And then just leave Naomi Watts with the baby right there.
Yeah.
I would have been totally fine with that as an ending. I didn't need that other shit. Again, because like the very last shot of the movie is just nothing more than like a Godfather callback. Only it's less interesting because at least in the Godfather, like, it's Diane Keaton looking down the hallway at her husband or her, you know, whatever. I think I don't know if they're married or not at that point. I can't remember. But she's looking down at Al Pacino and Al Pacino's meeting with everybody and they shut the door. And that's the end of the movie. That's good. This is just Viggo Mortensen playing with, I don't know, what are those beads? Do you guys know what those beads are?
Okay, so it's kind of like rosary, right? But is that something that's from like a Russian culture, or is that a religious thing, or is that something he's taken off of something that's important? I was like, where did this come in?
Well, as far as I know, and my knowledge is limited, don't they have like their own like Eastern Orthodox religion, which is like a version of Catholicism? Right, and they split.
Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's how their beads look. They're just giant blocks. They look like Tetris squares.
The one thing that I also had a kind of an issue with was how Naomi Watts like just kept like ordering these people around and kept getting deeper and deeper involved, and she just had no sense of danger. And it's like, do you not know what the mafia is like? I mean, especially because at one point she shoves like Viggo Mortensen, and it's okay because he's an undercover cop, but like,
right.
Also, if anyone else had saw her do that, like, he would have to retaliate, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Well,
I do like, the only person that's warning her is that her fucking uncle, who's like, I was ex-KGB, and like everyone's like, oh yeah, sure, buddy.
Oh, sure you were. Sure you were.
You know, so it's like, is that the most reliable source of information? But I do like where they start building suspense when she meets with the head of the Russian mob, and she starts like, she realizes like, oh shit, I don't really know this motherfucker. I'm giving him too much information. When she gives him the information, like, oh, there's a diary, and he turns around and he's like, oh, there is, huh?
He played that really well, and I cannot believe, again, that she had no sense of danger at any point.
Yeah.
No, I think
she knew. Of her interactions. Okay, and so at one point, yeah, I think she does know, and she's like, but it's still a good idea for me to give him the only evidence that we currently have.
Well, she made photocopies at least, Kristen. Come on, we gotta give her some credit.
Please. No, I'm not giving her any credit. I can't believe that I mean, I guess she is the baby's best option at this point. But like, yeah, no sense of danger whatsoever. I was just shocked by a lot of the things that she did in this.
It is really interesting that Viggo plays such like menace while also having a level of control, and the father guy has at least in the early half of the movie, like an air of I'm trying to invite you into this part of our culture, I'm going to be welcoming and warm, while also you feel a sense of dread from him, that we don't get that same sort of similar twofold sense out of her. Like she is kind of trying to figure some shit out, but I wanted a little bit more like, oh fuck, my motorcycle is fucked and I am in the wrong part of town and it's raining. I wanted a little bit more like sense of anxiety from her.
No, but like one of the things I liked about all these characters is they all showed a vulnerable side. Everybody, even up to the Don, you know? Like you feel a regret with them, or you feel them like when they're processing things. And I think she had those moments where she felt like she was in over her head, but she just seems to push herself into these fucked up situations. Like she doesn't have fear that she's fucking in the middle of the mob. You're just going to go randomly to a fucking restaurant and be like, hey, I'm looking for this girl that fucking like is like knocked up and fucking all this shit. She didn't give a shit that she's like putting herself in danger.
Well, like, going to the restaurant is fine. Going to the restaurant
because she wants to be a mom. That's what it is.
Yeah,
like, she does want to be a mom. Yeah,
that's totally what it is. Yeah,
I'm saying that was her motivation to go to even begin the journey.
Yeah, she wants to.
Yes,
because she lost her kid. She wants to right this baby's life because this baby lost her mother and she identifies with it immediately.
Yeah,
and she, like what is it? One point they even tell her like halfway through the movie, like you know, like why don't you just adopt the kid?
Mm-hmm.
It would be better than sending her back home because that's a shithole where she comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I think she actually needed permission from them to adopt the baby because I feel like that's why she was trying so hard to reunite them with this family. When, yes, I think any obvious anyone with any sort of brain would go, yes, she should be the mother. But it's like her grief cannot allow her to step into this role. And I think that's part of why she goes on this absolutely insane journey of trying to bind a shitty village in the Ukraine to send the baby to. Like, who even, like, you can't even do that. Like, what is she even talking about?
Yeah, who's going to take it spot? There? What like, are you talking about?
Hey, yeah. Anybody need this baby? You want this baby? Like,
let's go send you to the fucking Russian mob capital of the fucking Ukraine.
Yeah, like, just drop it off in the middle like a stork, you know?
Well, especially, expecting it, right? Listen, like if this is a 14-year-old girl who's a prostitute and pregnant, and she left her home, like either that girl left willingly because that's how awful her home is, or her parents sold her because that's how awful her home is. Like, what is she trying to do?
Yeah. None of those are good options. There's no reason for this girl to have gone that early to be in this life and to make anything going back to worth doing. But also, I think that maybe speaks to Naomi Watts' character's belief in the childcare system there. Like what, you know, she talks about once she gets into the foster system, she's never going to get out. Like,
oh yeah, they do bring that up. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Well, I think that I would hope that most people would have that thought, but I still think that at some point the foster care system would be better than some other places in the world. Like, let's just be very honest. There's a reason the foster care system exists. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, yeah, why doesn't she even consider adopting her? Like, that's crazy.
Especially at the front, you kind of feel like that's maybe where it's going to go anyways.
Yeah.
Like, definitely off the top
especially
of it.
Especially when they're like, oh yeah, you had a miscarriage and you really wanted this child. And it's exactly. Like, well, here's one who doesn't have a mother or a
it's
family.
It's kind of telegraphed. Yeah.
That's sort of why I feel like this whole script, which I do enjoy the story, but I do feel like everything was crafted around somebody watching a documentary about Russian tattoos because it's kind of flimsy in a lot of spots.
So do you think this is an instance of Cronenberg uplifting lower quality material, like a script that wasn't as well thought through as maybe some of his other work? Like you can make a great script shit, but you can't make a shit script great.
Well, he didn't rewrite this script. History of Violence he took and he rewrote with some actor input and stuff like that. This one was done by Stephen Knight, and he was hired from the BBC. This was originally going to be a sequel to like some BBC movie of the week or whatever they have up there. Maybe I'm not familiar with the BBC, but whatever. And then when they had rewrites, when Cronenberg got involved in Vigo, they told him, like, hey, like, we would like these things added in. We want these things expanded upon and stuff like that. And he went and did that on his own. So, yeah, this is like, I don't know. Is this this may be the first one that he did not write the script
for. He didn't actually write. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Or even rewrite. Because I don't think he touched this at all.
Wow.
I do think I will note that the dialogue is much better than last week's.
I was just thinking that, like, if he didn't touch the dialogue, maybe that's why some of it felt a little bit more natural, a little bit more like normal people talking, as opposed to like, this is what normal people should say, isn't it? Last week we had a lot of, yeah, history of violence has a lot of this is how humans talk.
That film is so visually, like, symbolic and metaphoric and like with what's going on that I'm okay with it.
You give the dialogue a pass, but you still need it to sound like actual people talk and not like this is how people are supposed to talk, insert dialogue here.
But for some reason that one feels like so much more lower budget and more contained and a smaller story and just like it just feels like what's the difference in the budget between this one and that one? This one has to be like what, twice that?
No. Well, okay. So this is hotly debated. If you look it up on Wikipedia, it says the budget's $50 million. But I was like, there's no fucking way. There is absolutely no way this movie costs fucking $50
million. Think it costs more?
Less.
It costs way less. What are we talking about? So anyway, did some digging, and I found 27 as the number. Mm-hmm. That sounds more right to me. Because they did all this in the UK. I think almost everything was like in London or around London, and they were doing their sets right then and there. History of Violence was 32. I mean, I would believe this is 27. You got less practical stuff in this. You just have the dead body. You got to cut the fingers off of. You got two slit throats.
There's the body in the freezer, and there's a lot of shit going on.
You got the body and
you
got to
shoot
fingers.
All this and all the location stuff.
Yeah. But like History of Violence, they're building the whole set. They're building everything outside. This movie, they're building interior sets, and did you notice, like, out the window of the family's house, it was like that. It was like a tiny little backyard, and you couldn't even see anything but the sky. Like, everything was blocked off. So you're not really seeing much. I don't know. If you look out in the sets, it looks a little
setty,
low budge, yeah,
constrained,
yeah. Whereas I feel like the sets in History of Violence were better. And they put a lot more money into those because they had to, because most of that movie's in a set inside. Whereas this movie, most of it's on, or at least half of it's on location. There's a lot of stuff outside the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. They keep coming back there. I do like seeing the different times of day that they do.
Yeah. The night stuff looks so fucking sexy, though. The man, they were just like fucking wetting those streets up, and it looks
so
good.
Looks great.
It looks so good. Yeah.
Especially with those, when we go through those sodium vapor lights. Oh, man, those things look, they look so good.
And I was trying to decide, like, were they finding these spaces that have these lights? Or are they bringing in these fucking lights and making these pools down these streets? But the damn light source is in the shot, so it's a damn street lamp. But I don't know. They're making so many things work, and it looks really, really good.
I really super love the door to the restaurant. It looks so cool. They go in and out of it so much in the movie, and they have so many conversations right there, and it's just like, I'm glad you either found a good door or you put a good door here. Put our money here. I like that.
Put it on screen.
But this did make less than History of Violence. This was worldwide was 56.1 million and only made 17.2 in the United States.
Wow.
Which is really surprising considering you got Viggo Mortensen and Naomi Watts, who at this time was like, 2 years off of King Kong? Way bigger than Maria Bello.
Hmm.
Although I guess you don't have an Ed Harris in this or a William Hurt. We have ratings? Who's going first? I went first last week. Come on. Somebody get some balls like Viggo. And dangle them in front of our faces.
Kristen?
Yeah, I can go first.
Thank you.
I can have balls here. It's fine. I enjoyed this movie, actually. I thought it was way better than History of Violence. And
incorrect.
If we, well, it's very correct, actually. And I, no, I thought the story was more interesting. Not maybe not as layered, but I was more enjoyable to watch. And visually, it was also more interesting. Costumes were more interesting. The locations were more interesting. I do think that this fell into sort of a, like, the, we talked about this, some of the tropes, and how this just felt like a general story that's been done before and we've seen it before, and there's nothing super new here. I do appreciate David Cronenberg's twist on it. It felt like we were, even though we've seen the story before, we know the story very well. You know, I enjoyed learning about Russian culture and tattoo prison culture and mafia culture. And, yeah, and he did it with this tone. Even though Naomi Watts wasn't on board, there was this sense of dread throughout the whole movie that I appreciated. And overall, the ending I also thought was very cliched. But, you know, again, I still thought it was enjoyable. I still, even though I hated the happy ending, it was still kind of heartwarming to see it. I was like, aw, look at them having fun in the kitchen making dinner. But it was, I would cut it. It was stupid. Okay. So I'm going to give it, I'll give it a, I don't know, if a 6.5 seems low. Oh. 7 maybe. I'll give it a 7. I enjoyed it.
What did you give
it? History of Violence? The 5. Mediocre.
Okay. All
this right, is so better than mediocre. Not outstanding. Wow. A lot of great things here, but not the best.
Did you have a favorite costume? You brought up, you haven't mentioned a favorite.
I haven't mentioned a favorite. No, I think what I really enjoyed was, yeah, maybe Viggo Mortensen's costumes in this, where he's just his driver costumes. And he's wearing the suits, but with the leather, like he looks tough, but he's polished. So like if anyone stops him, they wouldn't stop him is the point. He looks very well put together, but you also know not to fuck with him. I appreciated that a lot.
All right. Who's going next? Wait, what did you end up landing on? A 7 or 7?
Yeah, I'll give it a 7. Oh, okay. 7. You think I should go higher? I was thinking an 8, but now that we're talking about some of the issues, I feel like maybe a 7.
What issues? There's no issues.
All right, I'll stick to a 7 then.
Sounds like you're going next, Jared.
Look, man, I'm really enjoying seeing the softer side of Sears. You know, the softer side of David Cronenberg. Fuck you, Brian. No, man,
don't
seriously.
Don't go to that side. That's the dark side, Jared.
Well, you know, hey, show me more fucked up Cronenberg. I haven't seen too much. I've only seen the things you've shown me. But, you know, this dude knows how to tell a story, and he knows how to make me feel things. I really, really enjoy how this is shot and the layers, and Viggo is killing this fucking role, man. Every time he's on screen, I'm just like, damn, look at this motherfucker. Even with his bad hair. yeah, dude. I don't know, man. I think I gave History of Violence a 10. But that was also a really, really good movie, Kristen.
Was it?
It's not a perfect movie, though.
Yeah, it was.
For what itself, for what it was, yeah, man. And how it made me feel, Mike, yeah. I'll come in at a 9 on this one, and we'll see how it goes from here on.
Damn, you really thought about that, 9. Man, you thought about that.
I did. I waited on a couple things, but I think that's where I'm landed.
I'm not going to even cut that pause out. I'm gonna let that play. Mike, you want to go next? You want to go last?
I'll go next. We can end on a high note, literally, because Brian's going to give this higher than any of us.
Oh, no, he's going to go on the 10, of course.
Man, I love this movie as an exercise in tone. I saw it when it came out in 2007, and I remember it sitting with me. I remember loving Viggo Mortensen's character in this. Like, it's not something that I expected to see from him ever, and so it in the same way that we've referenced in the last couple movies with with Cronenberg. He's an actor's director, and people like working with him to do some interesting muscle workouts and as an actor. And I feel like Viggo in this was fucking superb. If I was rating it on his performance and his character alone, it would be a 10. But you know what? The movie doesn't withstand its own weight. There's a couple moments where it kind of drags. One of them specifically is when we're in the restaurant and at the night, and there's like a party, and there's like a dude playing some kind of fucking instrument. That was like a 2.5 minute long scene, and I got up and made some fucking popcorn. I was so bored.
That was all tone, Mike?
No, it was so goddamn boring. I understand. I understand Cronenberg's desire to, like, I'm going to explore some things, but sometimes he just indulges himself and puts some shit in his movies that just, they don't fucking need it. They're boring. It kills the tone. It kills the pacing. I was like, is this scene still going on? Fuck, my popcorn's done. What the, all right, cool. And there's the end of it. Got it. Cool. But you know what? For the most part, the movie moves along and makes it feel bigger than it is. Like I said earlier, it's not until the bath towel fight scene where I realized that all of this, like, oh shit, these are big deal people and they're the mob and all this stuff. It's just like two guys going to kill one guy and they're just walking through a bathhouse with shoes. Like, that's why they're menacing, because they're wearing clothes when everyone else is naked. Like if you stop and think about it from a slightly zoomed out perspective, there's not much going on in this movie, but goddamn, it feels like there is. And I have to respect Cronenberg for that, because he is doing a lot with emotions and with small nuanced things. I don't think the whole movie works the entire way through. I think there's some pacing issues and there's definitely some script issues, but I like what the movie does as an emotional journey, as a slice of life kind of situation. I don't hate that Viggo is an undercover cop. I think that explains what his character is doing, but my problems with this movie are at the script base. It's a rehashing of what other mob movies have done. We've seen all these characters before in different ways. So there are a lot of tropes, but you know what? Clichés and tropes become that way because there's an archetypal thing that's worth exploring, and I feel like maybe this is Cronenberg's attempt to take some of those archetypes that he has enjoyed in other experiences as an audience member and wants to play in that world for himself. Does it always work? No, but fuck, when it does work, it's gold. I think this is a pretty solid movie, and I'm glad to have revisited it 20 years later. It's an 8.5.
8.5. All right.
That's good, Mike. Solid.
I think I agree with I agree with all the positive things. I am a little too hard on this film just because it is a David Cronenberg movie, and I am expecting a little bit more. To be fair, while we were sitting here talking, right before we started getting to reviews, I just happened to look up at IMDb that I have open on the screen, and you know what? There was a trailer for No Country for Old Men, which just automatically just put me back in that mindset from when this movie came out. That's exactly why everybody forgot about this movie when it came out, because it came out like a couple of months before No Country for Old Men, and how amazing and different. Not that we hadn't seen. No, I guess we had. Yeah, we hadn't seen something like that. That was incredible. And then this movie is, it's a little pedestrian for David Cronenberg. It is so middle of the road. It is so what every other fucking filmmaker in the world is going to give you. It is not what I would expect from David Cronenberg. I expect more from him. I expect something different from him. Maybe that's not fair. But man, like, fuck, he made all those other movies, all right, before this. So it's his fault. Okay, it's his fault. I blame David Cronenberg.
He can't go on vacation, bro.
Like, I mean, yeah, no, you can't. Like, no, like when you're knocking tens out of the goddamn park, Jared, every goddamn time you swing, you know, when you come up and you're just bringing Russian Godfather light minus, you know, like, well, it's Russian Godfather minus an hour. Like, what are we doing?
Still good though.
It is, but I think it's going to only warrant an 8.5, maybe an 8. I don't know.
Wow.
It's going to, yeah, It's definitely not a 10. It's not a history of violence. It's I wouldn't even put it in Cronenberg's top 10. It's a nice entry point for normies that can't handle weird right. shit. There you go. Give us those rotten tomatoes.
Oof. Well, David Cronenberg triumphs again, showcasing the Viggo Mortensen's on-screen prowess in a daring performance, bearing the trademarks of a psychological drama and a gritty violence. Eastern Promises is a very compelling crime story.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes brings in Eastern Promises with an 89% tomato meter and an 83% popcorn meter.
Yeah, okay. I give it an 8. They're a little bit higher than I am. All right, okay.
Yeah.
Agree. So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Unless anybody's got anything else. Anything? Anything? Anything?
No, it's time to go to sleep.
You can get in touch with us by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook and X at Movie Crew Pod. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
You can find me on X at Jared B. Callen.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
If you see me, I will be on the Instagram.
It's at Griggsy Media, GRIGGSY Media.
Is the Russian internet different?
Yes.
Oh, bro.
It's like the Chinese internet.
It's completely different.
What is capitalism? It's removed.
And Chris, no capital letters. Sorry.
That was a pretty good. Touche, sir. And Kristen, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
And you can find me on X at Elkins Edits. And here goes 10 seconds of Howard Shore's Russian main titles. That's it. You really get to say enjoy when you're only hearing 10 seconds of it. I mean,
yeah. Try to enjoy.
Taste.
Yeah, just a little flavor.